You are listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network. Happy holidays, everyone, and we're indeed having a cheery one at OneOfUs.net because of our brand new beer sponsor. Everyone say hello to Circle Brewing. You can visit them at circlebrewing.com or come to their tap room in Austin, Texas at 2340 West Breaker Lane, Suite B. But these are A-quality craft beers all the way. Quite a few of their beers are available to buy at your local quality beer retailer in the can or the bottle. My personal fave is the Blur. Their Hefeweizen that I've been regularly quoted as saying is the finest hefe made in America. Or their delicious Ladybird IPA. But visit the tap room for seasonal treats that will definitely delight your taste buds. Now that's what the Ghost of Christmas Present showed us. The Ghost of Christmas Future has a more dismal outlook, but it depends on you to keep the apocalyptic future where OneOfUs.net no longer exists from ever happening. We depend on subscribers to keep the site running. We literally cannot put out our shows without you. And that ghoulish specter is even now pointing down at the gravestone with our name on it. Please think about becoming a subscriber, get lots of bonus content, and keep one of us from joining the darkest timeline. Man, sometimes you just come out of a movie and you have to go off on like an angry rant. And that was me after Mortal Engines. I'm out there going, like, feeling like I was personally insulted, going, what, they think they could just take Star Wars and Empire and cram them together and spray paint steampunk all over it? And everyone would go, no, that's not just a ripoff of Star Wars and Empire Strikes Back.
No, it's not. It's also a ripoff of a lot of Peter Jackson's greatest hits.
That's true.
Lots of Lord of the Rings stuff in here.
Wait, Chris, are you saying that you think Darth Vader was snarling under his mask as much as Hugo Weaving was in this movie?
Well, he's got resting snarl face, so he can't help it. That's just his look. Every once in a blue moon, they'll actually cast him as a good guy, but even then he's a good guy that you think is a bad guy.
I feel like Hugo Weaving was like, okay, Peter, for old time's sakes, I'll do this movie. Is this a trilogy? Oh, thank God, I only have to do one of these.
Yeah, and despite the marketing, you might be surprised to find out this was not, in fact, directed by Peter Jackson, which I love that they're always like, but from the makers of Lord of the Rings. It's like, okay, they were involved. They are two of the people credited on him and Fran Walsh on the screenplay, which is
actually screenwriters of everything he's done.
Kind of startling to me, all things considered. The more care
from the people that will disappoint you in the next 30 minutes.
Okay, I should say, I'm sorry, Chris, I cut you off.
No, I just want to say, before we get started, I'm Chris.
I'm Marco.
I'm Alan.
I'm Ben.
Yeah. Go ahead, Marco.
Well, what I wanted to say is, before I shit all over this guy's movie, and I'm gonna, I do want to say one nice thing about director Christian Rivers. It's a very heartwarming story. This is a guy who in the 90s was like a teenager who more or less just off the street walks into Peter Jackson's office and says, hey, I'm an artist and I'm kind of interested in working in movies. Is there something I can do? And then he just basically got the greatest on-the-job training anyone ever could get.
Yeah, 17 years old, yeah. Walks into Brain Dead, or Dead Alive, as they called it here, and became the storyboard artist for that. Has storyboarded every single Peter Jackson movie since then. And now, of course, unsurprisingly, Jackson's like,
unit director, yeah,
Jackson's like, here you go. You get to direct your own movie. We're going to spend a ton of money on it, $150 million. Like, it's going to be the beginning of a brand new super franchise. They'll be associated with your name.
He only offered it to him because they were wrapping up The Hobbit, and he said, I am exhausted, and this is the next thing. And this guy was in the process of, like, getting together the money for his own little independent, low-budget horror film that was going to be his feature debut. And suddenly, your friend and mentor, Peter Jackson, says, hey, would you like $150 million to make a movie? I can't blame the guy for saying yes to this.
Just to go off kind of one of the nice things you are saying about it, one of the only high points of this movie is, like, the art direction, the production design.
Yeah.
The machines look really cool. Some of the costuming looks cool. It is Steve Monkey, but it does look pretty. Most of the movie, and even a lot of the set pieces, are well-designed, well-storyboarded, probably.
Well, it was funny how
executed.
How much effort they put to making sure these big super cities were so detailed and like, it looks real, you know, overall. Sure. And then there's this shot at one point where there's, like, a mountain in the distance that looks like a matte shot from, like, 1950.
Right. I think they wanted it to look like, it looks like an old classic Albert Whitlock matte painting, like something that could have been in the background of Black Narcissus.
And it's amazing because we go from things like, you know, they had this one that's like, you know, those pill bugs, like type of machine. I was like, that thing's amazing. You see the individual legs
that was
crawling.
One of my favorite
it's really cool.
It's amazing. And then, yeah, then you go to that mountain. And it also has a weird confusion on visual style because the whole thing at the beginning, so super steampunk, you kind of get like, you know, 1950s type of costuming for the most part. Maybe some people a little bit looking like characters from, what's the one? The Catching Fire, the Mockingbird
movie. Yeah, they look like a cross characters from that and the Mad Max films.
Well, the thing is, then you get to the middle part after the whole thing with the pill bug thing, and all of a sudden a character from the fucking Matrix steps in there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's truly a hodgepodge of a lot of YA, and like the worst tendencies of all of them.
And not even just YA. Like I said, like Star Wars is all over this thing, especially in the third act where they just give up trying to hide it. They're just like, it's like everything that happens is like, oh yeah, and this is from Star Wars, and this is from Empire, and this is from Star Wars, and this is from Empire. But okay, we haven't even said, you guys are like, will you please stop complaining about the film and actually say what it's about?
Not much.
All right, so this is set in our world, and there was an apocalyptic conflict called the 60-Minute War, because instead of nuclear weapons, they had quantum weapons, which...
They had purple nuclear weapons.
Purple nuclear weapons that just, like, laser-zapped cities into destruction and poisoned the Earth. So somehow humanity survived, and I'm not sure how much later, quite a bit.
This is about 1,000 years. Yeah. There is one hint where they say, oh, that was 1,000 years ago.
Man, the poisoned earth is really green for poison.
It really looks great, right?
So super lush. I was like, damn, I'd like to live there.
I was thinking, maybe they just get super stuck in their ways. It's like, I know the earth is chill, but... I really like driving these cities around. Let's just keep doing it,
They're
man.
Just the future. Everyone's a redneck. They just want their monster truck.
It's like, my truck's biggest. And like,
wait till you see me open up Dusseldorf on the plains. It's great.
There is this one part of the world that's kind of this beautiful and full of resources, but it's blocked by a shield wall, which becomes important later. And so all of the mortal engines, which are basically city-states that are motorized and move around, they really want to get past this wall.
Yeah,
and that
or at least the big
the
ones.
For the weapons. Yeah, and that's what's keeping them from, like, the nice part of the planet.
So you have, like, the big one, the big dangerous one is London, basically, that, like, you see a lot of recognizable buildings and bits of architecture that
they want to colonize behind the wall. Oh, wait, sorry, wrong London.
Shush. That are crunched together into this giant, like, mile-wide long super tank that drives around eating up smaller cities on the run to steal their resources. And
basically Unicron.
You look at that and you're like, that's not really that efficient, is it?
All right, let's just get through the plot here because this could take forever. All right. So Robert Sheehan, if I know the three of you out there that watch the show Misfits might remember from, plays Tom, who's a lower caste guy, but he's kind of worked his way up a little bit that he's working as an assistant apprentice historian of London, where he works in the great museum that's on there. And he's kind of obsessed with tech, and he's the one who goes through all the shit that gets taken up from the cities they eat and looks for any good pieces of tech. Meanwhile, on the city that we see being attacked and eaten in the beginning of it, we have Hester Shaw, played by Hera Hilmar, who is a scarred badass of a chick who wears a mask and is apparently her whole plan from the beginning was to get on to London and do this thing, which is largely trying to assassinate Thaddeus Valentine, played by the scowly Hugo Weaving, who is the, you know, he's the Darth Vader of the city. Basically, there is an emperor guy, but he's not on screen very much and is largely doesn't really know what's going on.
He doesn't want unlimited power.
But like Robert Sheehan thinks that everything is great on London. You know, he's like, yeah, I like living here. London's cool. I kind of got a thing going where, you know, me and the daughter of the boss here, we kind of got like this whole, maybe there's something going to happen here and she's super hot. And so his life is pretty good. And when the assassin comes after him, he manages to save
Hugo Weaving
and chases after Hester. And basically Hester, right before she jumps off into the convenient exit port off the ship, tells him that like, oh, that he assassinated my mother. And, of course, Hugo Weaving, who is large, has been impaled, by the way, 30 seconds before this, shows up, has chased them all the way down here, and goes, what happened? He's like, oh, thanks so much for saving me. You're a good man. He's like, yeah, especially with all that crazy shit she was saying. He's like, oh, wait, what crazy shit? Oh, you know, push.
That is where the movie truly, like, up in there was enough goodwill from that opening set piece. He's like, okay, at this point, he could be like, oh, yeah, she must be crazy. But no. and said, I'm going to push you off the thing and just confirm beyond a shadow of doubt, like, I am the big bad here.
Right.
The movie gets real dumb and just goes down, so down, down from there.
There's lots of, like, flashbacks and expositions to bit by bit explain what the backstory is of why is Hester trying to assassinate this guy, what was the deal with her mom, Robert Sheehan doesn't really have a huge backstory. He's just, you know, whatever. He's the guy who's the love interest, the YA love interest, who slowly is ingratiating himself to the badass.
And in Deus Ex Machina, where he actually helps solve the biggest problem in the movie.
And there's a bunch of, scrappy fighters of the resistance that show up, including an ass-kicking Asian chick played by Jai Hay, leader of the Anti-Traction League. Get it? Because they're against traction cities. Yeah. They're for stable cities. Who fly various ships around, airships, and do all sorts of badass things. She's basically the Matrix suddenly entering the movie. Yes. When she comes in the movie with her look, were you not just totally
I thought the Matrix.
That's what I said. It is a Matrix character.
It's like
enters.
The Asian Trinity.
Even in slow motion, she's got the badass like leather trench.
She's got the sunglasses.
Are upside down.
Weird hair that's all styled up in a sort of futuristic way.
Like, none of the other Resistance pilots have hair or costumes like that.
You haven't even mentioned the Gollumnator yet.
I was about to get there. Stephen Lang, believe it or not, voiced and I guess mo-capped the undead Terminator with glowing green eyes that is chasing after Hester for reasons to be revealed later, yet another issue on here. It's just this huge cramming in of all this shit that ends up in a giant confrontation of a giant city-state London versus the people behind the wall, that where it's really just the end of Star Wars, pretty much.
It's the Battle of Helm's Deep meets Endor, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, now I can't say anything about the source material. I've never read the novels that this is based on. They could be great. I don't know. This feels like there's three or four novels that they just crammed into one film, because I can't imagine after where this one ends that there's any more story left in that world. And, you know, the better title for this movie would have been Mortal Engines of Plot Exposition, because you can count on one hand the number of scenes where someone is not talking about the plot.
Okay,
you never get to enjoy the world because they're constantly explaining everything.
Yeah, the movie opens with a voiceover narration that's exposition. They have dream expositions. There are written expositions on maps.
Yeah.
There's just like every single opportunity this movie has to explain to you what's happening or what has happened, it takes that opportunity.
At one point,
I'm still not quite sure exactly.
At one point, I thought for sure they were about to do a flashback inside of a flashback.
Yeah.
She was remembering her relationship with this assassin robot thing, and it really looked like they were about to give the robot a full flashback in the middle
of that. And then they found a way to still shoehorn a robot flashback.
Actually, I would have loved a robot flashback, because I have to say, if I could say two positive things about this movie, production design. That robot relationship with her is, like, the only thing in this movie that's kind of interesting.
Yeah, but then the way it all – the way they decided to end it was so laughably terrible.
So bad. So bad.
You're just like, wait,
but like,
what?
I mean, it's made me, like, yearn for, like, where's that full movie? Like, a girl and a robot saves her, like, grows up. That's, like, a weird, interesting, like – sidebar this movie takes for like 3 minutes. Like, oh, this is kind of interesting.
No, you wanted to see
shit's
her,
all over.
And the flashback is a little girl go, cool, my own Terminator.
Yeah. I like when like she gives Tom her back, so it's like, oh, when I left out, I was raised by a killbot. Just kind of a thing I forget to tell people. Sorry about
that. Well, you know, if you're just starting dating somebody, you don't want to bring up the bad
news. That's the other problem.
My dad is kind of weird.
Yeah. She goes from super surly towards Tom to suddenly like, okay, I'll try to keep him around, whatever. And then suddenly it's like those looks you get in those young adult movies of like, oh, I think I like this guy. Oh, I kind of love this guy. It's like nothing has happened. As far as we can tell in the plot, it's like it's maybe been 30 minutes and all of a sudden you're falling for this guy when no action interaction has happened between you that has ingratiated him to you or shown any more emotion past like him being like, oh, so what's your life like? It's like, I'm not going to tell you about my life. One scene later.
Let me tell you about my life.
It's like that SNL skit from a couple years ago. They did a YA skit where, like, the girl comes to the guys is like, you should be special. Like, you're chosen for something. Also, I think I love you. and it's like, this movie is that skit. Like, it's ridiculous.
Funny. This feels like I binge-watched a six-hour Netflix series, but I passed out every 20 minutes. Yeah. And I was like, what happened? Wait, That dude who was kind of... Where the hell did he go? It doesn't matter. He's gone now. It's so
that's the whole
disjointed.
Thing. Is, it would have made... This would have worked so much better if they had just worked on that relationship between those two main characters. There's very little humor in this movie, and most of it is just, oh, I recognize that thing when they find some artifact from yeah. our time.
Ooh, let's stay in on this iPhone. Look at this yeah. ancient technology. Here's the iPhone.
And that's the first, yeah. like, 30 yeah. minutes of this movie. It goes on for another 2 hours.
Look yeah. at this classic, semi-classic universal character that everybody's going to recognize when we point
oh,
out.
Oh, God. That.
Yeah, oh, my God. I was just like, "Are you didn't just do that,
did
you?
I did. I kind of laughed because didn't he call them deities?
Yeah.
American deities? Yeah. That's kind of funny.
I mean, I was just like, this is, like, the weirdest fucking self-product placement I've ever seen in, like,
very,
a genre
It was
film.
Very jarring.
It's like, this is what? 1,000 years in the future, and yes, they play the Twinkie joke exactly the way you expect them to do it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the thing. It's like, there's this joke with Twinkies, and you're like, y'all are just reading from the oldest joke playbook that exists wow. right now. You're like, really? Is that joke new to anyone?
It's as old as a 1,000-year-old Twinkie. That's yeah. how old that joke is.
Yeah. The other only problem I have with this movie palatable. Is, you know, we talk about Hugo Weaving a little bit. Like, there's a bit where they're trying to play it up. It's like, yeah, you know, maybe he's a good guy. Like, as we said, his daughter's in this, and his daughter's like, no, my dad's a good guy. And she goes to find, you know, Tom's friend who she believes saw something. And he's like, well, your dad's not as good as you think. She's like, no, he's not. It's like, they walk by a picture and he goes, you don't know what he's doing. He's like, you're right. Maybe my dad is evil. I'm like, wow, is he that snarly that even his daughter's like, yeah, it took maybe 2 sentences for me to turn on my dad.
It's funny you brought that up because I forgot that that character was in this movie. Yeah. like the her and that guy disappear so often and yeah. like they show up for a minute and then they're gone for another 20. I forgot that they were in this movie until you brought that up.
They're going to have a relationship of some kind and then they don't. And then that dude disappears.
They're only there to be plot devices and yeah. that's it. They're necessary to advance the plot at 2 points of the film and then neither one of them is really necessary.
The thing is, they don't even really advance the plot. What they do is they show up in scenes where things happen.
They're like exposition devices.
Yeah, because he tells her, yeah, your dad's been doing some bad stuff. We can't get in there. And then the next scene that you actually see them is they go there and we see that the stuff that Hugo Weaving was already about to steal, he stole it. And then it's like, well, let's go up in this magical staircase to get to where his lab is. But the movie was already showing us his lab. So we didn't even need them to show up and see this lab to know what he was making.
Where she's not an exposition device, though. She is, like, the other character. She is a plot device. She's like, oh, shit, we forgot. Somebody's got to be in this place to do this thing or this doesn't work.
Yeah.
It still doesn't work.
Yeah. I don't know, man. This is like... It just so many things about this. I can't believe this even got past the scripting stage to production, kind of, because you're like, how did you look at this script and think that this was going to pass muster?
You know, it feels like one of those movies where production was going, storyboard stuff was being created, CGI was being
too
made.
Late now,
and it's like, all right, fit the script around this fucking huge set piece we have because it's going. Like, we're starting next week, you know?
I can't, and I may change my mind next week, but lately I've been really feeling like this. I'm probably going to come across like a Luddite here, but I'm kind of tired of world building. I mean, tell me a good fucking story. The real world has plenty of great stories. Too many of these fucking shows seem to be greenlit on the basis of, hey, this is set in a really weird, cool world. Cool. Give me a story. But yeah, but there's big cities on legs. Like, that's great. What's the story? You know, we have all these airships and these beautiful... what's the fucking story?
I'm with you.
I don't care about
it.
All this world building.
I mean, I don't...
Especially when you don't allow me to enjoy it because a character's constantly explaining to me what's going on.
I'm
going to
disagree with you. I think there's plenty of great examples of world building. This is just an example where they were more concerned with that than they were with actually having good characters or a good story.
Well, I understand what you're saying is, like, movies are being made with great world building, interesting worlds, and no story. Like... That movie last year, the Valerian movie, which I didn't at all. Like, that world was so cool, but fuck, that movie sucked. Like, it's a great world. It is so interesting and fun to look at. And, like, I feel like there are more and more movies like that. And that's
it's
frustrating.
The point is that Peter Jackson was one of the guys who proved that you could do it well.
You could have both. Mm-hmm. Of course, he was working from some solid shit. So.
I mean, that's what I'm saying. The other problem with this movie is it is clearly two different movies put together, two different books put together, because honestly. As much as I would almost be to my chagrin to see a second one, if they split this in half, where the first half of the movie, before we get to the, you know, rebellion fighters and all that, was its own movie, we could have actually had the characters have interactions and actually explain how they fall in love or something. You know, develop things. But instead, they had to fill in all that world building, then all the exposition, and then they move into the rebellion and the backstory of the rebellion. They didn't give themselves any breather, and maybe they didn't have enough money to make this twice.
Or I get the issue. I was looking over the books, and this is basically a crunch together of the books. Yeah. And like all the books end on giant cliffhangers, so there's no sense of like this is a standalone thing. And boy, there's nothing I hate worse than a new franchise starting with a cliffhanger and going, no, it's fine. I mean, I didn't mind it with Lord of the Rings because it's fucking Lord of the Rings.
So
it's one of the most famous and lauded book series ever written. But like, you know, I get why they were like, we're gonna have to finish this up in one movie. I just feel like maybe there were story elements they should have just gotten rid of. Like, is it really... Couldn't you have made this without the Gollumnator? Like, there would have been a good 30 minutes left cut out of the movie. You could have made better, like, character development.
You could easily have written that out.
It's just the one cool character design. I could see somebody going, oh, but it looks so cool, potentially. And I'm like, who cares?
Well, yeah.
And again, they could have dropped Hugo Weaving's daughter in the friend that saw him get pushed
out.
Because everything else that they showed... Basically, they showed us everything of Hugo Weaving's evil plot without them. We didn't need them, and they were probably at least another 15 minutes of this movie we could have gotten back.
All right, well, let's go to final thoughts. Alan, get us started.
While we were talking about it, while I was watching it, I was thinking of all, like, oh, I'm going to talk about how bad that is. That's a weird thing. This is bad. And when we sat down, I was thinking about them, and I forgot all of them because the movie is also pretty boring and bland. Like... So, I don't have much more to say that other than production design was cool. That's it. I'm going to go quick with it. I'll give it 2 American deities out of 10.
Marco?
Man, I came into this with so much, I won't say goodwill or high hopes, but I was like, you know what? I'm going to give it a chance. And because I really do genuinely like Christian Rivers' stories, a story of how he came up through Weta, and I was hoping that he would get a chance to prove himself a rightful successor to Peter Jackson. I don't necessarily blame him, because, again, it was forced upon him in a way, and he had no choice but to accept it. Still, what is here, it's too bad, because that could be a very potentially promising career, possibly cut short by a really awful reception this movie's going to get. You're right, it is derivative. I'd be okay with that if it were better executed, but it wasn't. Wow, this is a real disappointment. I'm going to give this 3 out of 10 lockets you've had for 20 years but never thought to open until it was narratively expedient.
Ben?
Yeah, there's so many little things and stuff towards the end that doesn't even make sense. You know, they have this super weapon at the end. It's basically a Death Star. And yet somehow there's this wall that it takes like 3 blasts to get through. I'm just like, why?
Well, when you're like, oh, here's that weapon with one shot in the past destroying New York City in one shot, just wiping it out.
But this is the steampunk version now, so it's kind of shoddy.
There's that. And then there's like, Hugo Weaving has above and beyond a hard-on for getting through this wall at the risk of everything, to the point where it's like, what would you do if you risk what you risk? I'm not going to spoil it because somebody might still want to see this movie after a review, and you might care about that. Whatever. It just never really fully worked for what's going on. His character never seems to make sense with his motivations. And honestly, there's the other thing about, like, oh, the city of London is supposed to be really, you know, they're all good people, you know. And at the beginning, you kind of get that, because when they capture the first city, it's like, oh, they're not killing all the people on this city. They're basically adopting them and just saying, we're taking all your resources, which I'm like, why are you running from London? Clearly they have their shit together.
That seems like a better deal.
Yeah. But then, like, in the end, they're still cheering when they're blowing up this wall that they know there's a bunch of civilians behind. Like, because they never make it clear that these anti-attraction people are, like, fighting the ships and going out there and, like, making raids on London. No. They're just like, oh, we don't like them because they don't like our way of life. It's like, okay, cool. Then why are you cheering for their death right now?
Philosophically, we're just very anti-static. We're very dynamic.
You know, both sides have issues, Chris. That's the problem here.
There's good people on both sides, Ben. He's like the anti-Trump in some ways, though, where he wants to tear down the wall.
He's like Ronald Reagan. Tear down this wall.
Okay. Overall, I mean, yeah, the visuals are stunning. And honestly, if they put out like an art book, I'd be interested if I find it like on sale at a Barnes & Noble to pick up the art book, because it is gorgeous. But no, it's not worth seeing this movie. I give it 3 out of 10 easily explodable airships.
I mean, I agree with you. It's pretty mainly in the sense of how convincing the CG is, how like the way that you look at this big city and you're like, wow, that looks, they made it look real. And there's a lot of moving parts, a lot of shit going on. I'm impressed with the artistry on a technical level. But honestly, I mean, seeing a lot of steampunk type stuff, I'm like, yeah, I've seen shit that looks just like this many times before. There's nothing that blows your mind like, wow, that's so cool and new. Because it really isn't. It's just the first time you've seen it with super hyper-realistic CG doing it.
Basically, and a Doctor Who design.
And that's fine. I kept thinking, you know, this would be nowhere near as annoying if it was an animated film. I would have been much more into it as an animated film. Because, honestly, the very premise from the get-go, I was having a hard time getting past. I'm like, having giant mini-moving cities makes no sense.
It makes no sense, but if the entire movie was giant cities chasing giant cities,
there was some talk about the Earth had become so unstable that the cities had to constantly be on the move because the tectonic plates.
Yeah, but then there's a whole giant series of cities that don't do that, so that whole thing is moot.
It's never explained.
After a few hundred years, it calmed down.
I guess maybe the Earth looks like is in remarkably good shape, all things considered.
Yeah,
that it's been it was blown the fuck up with quantum radiation. I kept expecting the place to look like the movie Annihilation, where there's like crazy animals and like weird foliage and shit. But no, it's just fucking England.
It doesn't. The cities ran over all.
It doesn't even look like Mad Max. It looks literally like somebody was like, "Oh look, here's a really lush forest. Like, cool. Can't you make a city and a farm there? Yeah, and a nice life."
The whole thing is just getting fuel. There's fucking trees everywhere, man, and like fucking just you can. There's no reason you have to specifically fuel this thing with like the bits of cities. The thing is a giant bulldozer. Essentially, just dig up bits of the earth and feed the fucking thing. Well, it was like, anyway, the point is, there's a lot of, that's only one of many points where you go, wait a minute, what in this movie where it makes no narrative sense, really, that like you could poke holes in it so easily. But another issue I have with here is this director, you'd think, working under Peter Jackson, would know how to shoot a fight scene, but no.
Yeah, big set piece is good, fight scenes, bad.
Bad. Yeah. Like, wow, that looked terrible. I mean, I think. I can't really tell what was happening. Like, you know, like, Jackson knows how to shoot big fight scenes, small fight scenes. He's great at it. I mean, he does it like he was born to do it. This was like, come on, man. These guys are standing right next to you, and you couldn't go, I could use some help with this one. Because it's just like, that's just a mess. But once again, I'm just trying to fill in on the stuff we hadn't actually already said. I think this movie is one of, it's like a Waterworld embarrassment, really. There's so many things about it that are cheesy and bad. I have a hard time even giving it extra points for the fact that the CG rendering looks as good as it does here. I walked out of this feeling like my intelligence was insulted. I was just like, how dare you? You really think we're just that stupid that we're going to like watch this thing that's just stealing just whole giant bits of one of the most famous franchises
and
ever made.
Some of the most famous scenes from the most famous franchises ever made.
Dude, the probably most quotable scene in Empire Strikes Back. There's a point where they go there, and we just started hysterically laughing by that point. We were like, you guys have got to be fucking kidding me with this bullshit.
There's a few. In the last 30 minutes, I was sitting between Chris and Alan, and just all three of us were laughing. I'm sure Marco was as well, but it's just like, really? These are the things you're doing with your final act?
It's just,
Jesus Christ.
They should honestly be kind of ashamed of themselves. They really should, because this is just blowing money on nonsense. I did not care for this movie one bit, and I'm going to give it 2 out of 10 really pointed references. Oh, man. I'm actually angry at this movie.
All right. No, Chris, it could be worse. Here. You could have a very minor scar that makes you hideous.
Oh, yeah. No, if I get one so much as like a little scrape, I'm like, oh, look away.
Chris, they with a paper cut. You'll never be loved again.
I was like, no, for a dude, you're like, whoa, you're like Snake Plissken. Cool scar. Chick, you're like, oh, you're never getting laid again.
It's awful.